The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's 9 o'clock.
It's time for more 92.9 The Game Tonight as we get you caught up with all things Atlanta sports and beyond.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Triple at Night, baby. Got another hour left, actually about 57 minutes, hanging out with my guy Dom, who's done an amazing job. All right, latest college football rankings for the playoff are out, of course, and I have an issue with a lot of. Of course, you got Oregon number one, followed by Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame, Georgia number five, Ohio State six. Then you have Tennessee, SMU, Indiana at nine, Boise State 10, Alabama 11, Miami 12. Okay. The only problem is, with Miami in the mix and Alabama, I got to say, Ole Miss and South Carolina are better teams than Alabama and Miami. But there's a brand bias is what it boils down to. It's a brand bias. That helmet matters than the resume, apparently.
I'd say South Carolina is better than a couple of teams are ranked ahead of them.
Nobody wants to play South Carolina right now.
Absolutely.
They're on a six-game winning streak. They've got four victories over top 25 teams. And look at this. Alabama goes out, and recently before the Iron Bowl, they lost to an Oklahoma team that went 2-6 in the SEC, and their average loss was like 17 points. Vanderbilt went 3-5 in the SEC. Alabama loses to both, lost to Tennessee. I'm sorry. This has got to be some sort of a brand bias. I wonder if it's going to come out one day. Is the College Football Playoff Committee, are they as corrupt as FIFA? You remember how corrupt they were?
Oh, man.
The FIFA corruption was unbelievable. Mm. How much money? I mean, suitcases of money, cash, were exchanging hands at some of those meetings involving FIFA. I'm only half joking, but that's what it boils down to. Now, it looks like Georgia's in regardless of what transpires on Saturday at 4 o'clock against Texas at Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the SEC championship. But fundamentally, Georgia wants to win this game because Georgia desperately wants a bye. They do not want to have to play again. I'm telling you, you cannot tell me that it's going to be easy for Georgia to recover after that absolute war bloodbath with Georgia Tech.
Eight overtimes.
Extremely physical. What would you do to change the overtime? It gets where I don't even understand it anymore.
Yeah,
why do you get the ball twice in a row after you failed 2-point? What?
Yeah,
I just can't.
It's weird. I personally would rather them just do the like how the first overtime is, where hey, offense goes out at the 20-yard line or wherever, 25-yard line, try and score. If you don't, kick a field goal. Other team has a chance to. I would rather them just alternate doing that instead of the whole like, oh well, then you have to go for two or like. Get to the point where like you're forced to go to two after you score every time.
Why don't they
like
do
that?
A 7-on-7? That's what they ought to do.
One of my dreams is really make these kickers earn their keep after an overtime, we go to like a sudden death type deal where like you just have the kickers alternate taking kicks and like you keep pushing it back.
Five yards. It's like it's like PKs in soccer.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So you start them off at like the 35-yard line. Hey, you kick, you make it. All right, guy. Next guy go up, you kick. Both make it. Oof. Push it back 5 yards.
As if kickers aren't hated enough.
I think that'd be a lot of fun.
As for Georgia, though, I think. Can you give me the line on that one? I thought I saw maybe Texas by 4 or something like that. Georgia embarrassed Texas. I mean, that was the biggest game in the history of Darrell K. Royal Stadium out there in Austin, and Georgia went out there and just beat them up. I think Texas had, 59 yards rushing, something like that. Carson Beck played extremely well. The entire team did. What's the line on that one?
The spread right now, Texas is favored by 2.5 points.
Two and a half. Okay. All right. And it's going to be tough. And there exists a scenario where Georgia could play Texas a third time.
Yeah.
I would never want to see a team for a third time. I don't want to see a team for a second time in college football.
Yeah.
The pros, you have to within your division.
Mm-hmm.
But a third time, then all bets are off.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You've seen that opponent. This is the third time. You know them so well now. You've played it twice. You kind of know exactly what the strengths and weaknesses are.
And Texas' defense is even better now. And they have a wrinkle now. Quinn Ewers, I think when he hurt his ankle, he is not quite being the same. We saw Arch Manning come in red zone situations. That's going to be a wrinkle that Kirby Smart has to account for. Not going to be an easy game for Georgia. Still going to be compelling. Both teams still have a lot to play for. I still think I wonder if there will come a day with this college football playoff, and especially if it expands to 16, will they do away with the conference championship games? I don't know. It's too much of a cash cow, I guess. But it seems like a lot of times it's not even worth it.
Yeah, I think they want to have the conference championship games mean stuff. So I don't think they'll ever go away. I think that's why they kind of tried to make them a little bit more relevant by giving the top conferences first round buys in the playoff if you do win your conference and stuff like that. So they're trying to keep it relevant.
Yeah, but if I'm Tennessee, I'm happy, man. Good.
Yeah, yeah.
We're in the playoffs. We're in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We can rest. We can really rest and get healthy and really figure out and self-scout and figure out what's gone well and what hasn't. You've got that freshman quarterback up there who's very gifted but has had some issues. He can get coached up and practice and everything else and don't have to worry about playing this extra game. I would certainly be happy. But I know Kirby Smart is a 2-4 lifetime in SEC championships. I know personally since he is old school and he does have that devotion and that love for the SEC that he wouldn't mind winning another one. Texas would really love to come into the SEC after the snobbery of the old guard of the SEC kind of thumbing their nose at Texas.
Mm-hmm.
They come in here, and what do? They win the SEC in their first year. And this is what's been so fun about college football this year. And all this is fun, too. As much as I disagree with Alabama and Miami, it's such a fun conversation to
Absolutely.
Have.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But I was so overwhelmed today with, just reading all the different scenarios. My head was about to explode. And then I'm reading about, South Korea has declared martial law. Bitcoin might get to 100,000. No, it's not even real money. I don't know. UFOs over New Jersey. Well, that's Project Bluebeam. No, it's actually entities from another dimension, demonic entities that spawn from fallen angels. I don't know. It's too much. But look at it this way. Last year, SMU was a Group of Five team. Now, they're in the ACC championship in their first year. Oregon, who had the best season in the Big Ten? No, it wasn't you, Penn State. No, it wasn't you, Ohio State. It was Oregon, who beat Ohio State, by the way.
Yep.
In their first year in the conference. And they come from the afterthought that was the Pac-12. And if I remember what a great year the Pac-12 had last year? Last year.
The death of the Pac-12. Yeah. It was an amazing year.
And you had
year.
Two teams in the semifinal in Washington and in Oregon.
Hell, I was going to say, speaking of teams that came into new divisions, everyone told me Colorado was going to be the worst team in the Big 12.
Yep.
And look at how close they were to being in a conference championship game.
They were, yep. But And for all the criticism, Deanna, a lot of it deserved, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly a lot of it deserved.
He definitely brings some of it on himself.
Maybe a little bit too preoccupied with the social media and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's fair.
This, that, and the other. But he may have something going. Do you think he's going to stay there even after his kids are gone? I wonder. I get the impression he wants to.
I don't think Julian Watkins, the kid here at Georgia, Juju,
Yeah, from out of Carrollton.
Yeah, I don't think he commits to Colorado if Deion If Deion isn't staying, I think Deion.
But you think Deion would tell you one thing and do something else? Let's be honest. I think he's very, very capable of that.
That is true. Or, like, if anything, because the only thing I could see, because I don't think Deion would jump to the NFL.
He says he has no desire. He likes coaching kids and grooming young men is what he says.
Yeah. Now,
but what he says and what he actually do, that's because we're talking about Deion Sanders.
What I could see is him telling Juju to come to Colorado and then also letting him in and being like, hey, I'm probably going to bounce and try and get this Florida State job.
Yeah.
So if you want to come and follow me, you can start here at Colorado and we can start building this thing up and then you can follow me to Florida State.
Well, Mike Norvell hasn't been fired yet, has he? That hasn't dropped yet. it's probably inevitable.
Why hasn't he?
Yeah,
the question.
I know. Good for Billy Napier, though. Maybe saving his job at Florida because they kind of turned things around.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew how daunting their schedule was coming into the season. That, they just kind of scratched and clawed. They might, if their quarterback not gotten hurt, they were giving Georgia fits.
I was going to say.
Lagway got hurt.
Yeah, so I was going to say, once Lagway came in, he really kind of took the offense and took it to a level that it needed to be. I think that they got off to such a tough start. And like you said, that schedule was horrific.
Horrific.
It was going to be murderer's row for anyone. You were going to lose multiple games this year no matter what.
Yep.
But for them to fight and claw, because they very easily could have ended up just like Florida State and just threw in the towel after they had a rough start to the season. They didn't.
Nope.
They fought.
He didn't lose the team.
Exactly. And I think that's the only reason he keeps the job is because he saw the team never stopped fighting for him. They never stopped playing hard. They didn't win all the time when you thought they should, but they never stopped fighting.
And Florida State, I guess they're left out of the playoff for a second consecutive year.
You think they'll cry about it this year, too?
They're going to cry about it this year, too. But Miami and Alabama, that's brand bias, I think, certainly, because Miami does not deserve to be in the playoff. I'm sorry.
They don't.
The way they lost to Syracuse, blowing a 21-point lead, if you are what everyone thinks you are and what you think you are, you go ahead and close that game out. You don't come up here to Atlanta and let Georgia Tech just smack you in the mouth the way they did. And Georgia Tech smacked them in the mouth.
Absolutely. And like I said, it's just the fact that they stumbled down the gate is what makes it so crazy for me. Like, two of their last three, they lost. Like,
and I thought it was better to lose early, right?
Exactly.
Tom?
The entire reason why Notre Dame is going to end up being in here is because no one cares about them losing to Northern Illinois anymore because it happened back 2.5 months ago.
Yep. It used to be, if you're going to lose early. And as for the head-to-head stuff, well, it doesn't matter overall because it imagine head-to-head only matters if your resumes are the same. So everybody's saying, well, you know, Ole Miss and Alabama both beat South Carolina, but your resume, South Carolina's resume is better with 6 straight wins and 4 victories over top 25 teams. And, oh, guess what, Alabama, just 2 weeks ago, you went and lost to a bad Oklahoma team. Oh, guess what, Ole Miss? You went down to Gainesville and lost to a mediocre. I'm not going to say Florida's bad because they improved, but another game. If you are what you think you are, you go down there and you win that game. Bummer. But South Carolina should be in this playoff. Maybe there's still a chance. I have no idea. It doesn't look likely, though. All right, going to come back. Kirk Cousins is public enemy number one. Is it fair? Is it not fair? I think it's very fair, but guess what? Can the Falcons get right after losing 3 in a row against a 10-2 team in a very difficult environment? I think they can. That's coming up next, Sports Radio 99 The Game.
Pace yourselves. It's going to be a crazy night.
This is 92.9 The Game tonight.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Tribble at Night on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Got my guy Dom with me as well. Penultimate segment. It's flown by, this cavalcade of whimsy, unfiltered sports talk, cutting edge, all the things. So, of course, Georgia getting ready for Texas. And Georgia, they're in the playoff no matter what happens. We know that. But they're trying to avoid a road game, and they really, really want that opening bye. And I've got some problem. Alabama, as currently constituted, is in. But if so you got SMU and Clemson in the ACC championship game. So if Clemson wins that, I think that bounces Alabama out, I would imagine. But it certainly is tantalizing, the notion of a old school matchup between Notre Dame and Alabama, certainly. But Georgia still has a lot to play for. They are in no matter what, but they do want that bye, especially after just that brutal schedule they went through this year and that brutal game against Georgia Tech that they somehow won through hook or crook. You can sit there and say that was targeting on Haynes King by, what's that kid, that Morgan kid's name? I don't know. Georgia Tech shot themselves in the foot in the first half. They left about 14 points on the field. They missed that chip shot field goal. They went for it on fourth and short, could not get that. That's probably at least 10 points they left on the field. We're not even talking about overtime. So you can sit there and talk about the targeting, this, that, and the other. I don't know. That's why you can sit there and say, well, it's the first quarter. They squandered that opportunity. It seems like those things always come back to bite you. Like Falcons, they missed that field goal early. Yep. That first drive. This is why I think Kirk Cousins may not be healthy. There's no zip on the ball. Was that Mooney that he had that very first drive of the game, that 13-play drive? Wasn't that Darnell Mooney he had?
Yeah.
Inside the 5-yard line. He threw like a John Smoltz slider. It was like a yard short. He walks into the end zone. That's a touchdown.
Yep.
Whole different outlook. And Koo misses a normally makeable field goal. His hip is bothering him. He's also in his head. And now you have to go play a very good Vikings team at Minnesota. Very tough place to play. They're 10-2. They're fifth in points allowed per game at 18.3. They're giving up the least rushing yards, which is a strength of this Falcon team. So that's going to be strength on strength. They have the fourth most sacks, the most interceptions as well. And you have a guy that just threw interceptions going up to a ball-hawking team like Minnesota.
League leader in interceptions.
Yep, most interceptions. But they're just ninth in scoring, 28th in passing. They're an average running team at best. So if your defense has turned a corner and you play as well as you – yes, Justin Herbert's kind of known for holding onto the ball too long, but you were getting pressure. You played well last week. They couldn't run the ball on you either. But if the defense has turned that corner and they're consistent – this is a winnable game. It's like I said, five games left, five are winnable, five are losable. And there's no guarantees you're going to win that game in Vegas on Monday night. I mean, if it wasn't for that ridiculous call, the Raiders might have beaten Kansas City. Don't you find it kind of weird? And I hope to God it never comes out that everything is rigged. There's a lot of people that think that things are rigged, it's that and the other. But I think if everything are rigged, that's a lot of people that have to keep quiet about being rigged.
Yeah, that's always one of the things when people talk about some of these conspiracy theories is that, like, for something to be this rigged, do you know the amount of people that would have to be in on it? And do you really trust that amount of people to keep a secret?
Well, you have to blackmail them and threaten to kill their family, basically, is what it boils down to. I'm not joking. So the Chiefs are 11-1. They've won nine games. 9-1 possession games. Six games on the last play. Their largest margin of victory was 13 points, and I believe that was against the Saints. Yes, they've won 9-1 possession games. Now, in that Raiders game, Aiden O'Connell and Jackson Powers Johnson, they botched the snap, fumbled that, recovered by the Chiefs. Antonio Pierce maintains he heard a whistle from the sideline that would have indicated a false start, therefore dead ball penalty. But no, then they actually said, no, illegal shifts. So it was actually a live play. Chiefs maintained possession. And you think about the Kyle Pitts lack of a pass interference call here in Atlanta when the Chiefs won 22-17.
Yep.
Falcons likely would have won that game if it wasn't for that non-call pass interference.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like the ball always bounces the Chiefs' way. And I'm sorry, I think it's due to Taylor Swift's connection with the Illuminati, the people that rule the world, and it's now mandated that the Chiefs are going to win a third consecutive Super Bowl. Nothing to do about it. There you go.
Hey. It's the script.
It's the script. It is the script. But, man, it's just it's amazing how they just keep winning games. And
It's funny. I was talking with I was actually talking to my dad about this the other day, and I said the Chiefs have reached that point where the Patriots reached in their dynasty where they don't even have to win games anymore. They just wait for the other team to lose it because
it
the other
like
team
it.
Gets in their head about playing the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Like that. I feel
there
like that happens every week.
I feel like
teams get in their head about playing the Chiefs and just play up tight, and they make those mistakes in the crucial moments that the Chiefs don't.
Well, especially now when you're getting these advantageous calls late in the game, you're thinking, well, what's going to happen now?
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking, you're wondering. And one thing about the Chiefs last year, they kind of sleptwalked through the season up until January. Then they woke up and then asserted themselves. Mm-hmm. But I think it might be the year for your Steelers, my friend. I mean, now they're playing some offense as well. Russell's playing very well. I think he and Sean Payton, that was oil and water.
Yeah. It was never going to work in Denver because year one you had Hackett, who we all don't even need to go into that.
Yep.
And then in year two, and also like for year two, even for him and Sean Payton to not have mixed well, his numbers were still good. He threw for like 25 touchdowns.
Right.
Threw for over like 2,500 yards. Had they not benched him the last like three games of the season, his numbers would have been even better. Like he was good in Denver his second year.
And I think about it. And Russell Wilson, he's a bit of a clown. Certainly seems disingenuous, sits out in the other. But he and Arthur Smith are certainly on the same page. And I got to give all the credit in the world to Justin Fields.
Mm-hmm.
Just the fact when he got benched, he goes, "I don't think I really deserve to start. I haven't played well."
Yeah.
What an attitude he has.
His mentality, it's so funny seeing, because I remember I tweeted out about this when that happened, his mentality versus Kenny Pickett's mentality.
Yeah.
When Kenny Pickett heard that Russell Wilson was going to be coming in, and not only that Russell Wilson was going to be coming in, that he was probably going to be the presumed starter, Kenny Pickett immediately was like, "All right, get me out of here."
Yeah.
Which, what the hell have you done in your career
Nothing.
To make you feel like you have that sort of ego and that sort of pull?
Yeah.
But sure. Justin Fields, who has actually had more success than Kenny Pickett in the NFL, came in, had been playing well. Team was 4-2. We were number one in our division. I don't know how much more you could have asked from Justin. And he went out there and said, "I understand. It's the job. I thought I played good but not great, and I should have played better if I wanted to keep it."
I was still in that camp that I was very intrigued about the notion of Justin Fields coming here to Atlanta.
I thought the Falcons should have taken a chance on Justin or Russell. Either one of them made sense to me.
I don't know if Russell, there's a chance he'd ever come here, but because I like the idea of that number 8 pick. Who's the kid out there, the Rams, that's balling out, that defensive, I can't even think his name now.
Jared Verse?
Yeah. He wasn't necessarily as touted coming into the draft. I don't think he might have been a late first day, early second day guy, but he's certainly been a difference maker. He's been amazing.
He's got like 4.5 sacks this year. That'd be number one on the team.
Yeah, it would
be number one on the Falcons.
Imagine if you'd have gotten that defensive player at number 8 now, but you had Michael Penix, and now Michael Penix, everybody's thinking, is it time for him to play? What makes you think he's going to necessarily be a revelation if he comes in? You might get a bit of a jolt initially, but does he have what it takes right now with his limit? He's just gotten snaps in garbage time. This is real pressure now.
Everything this organization has told us, everything this organization has done tells us that they have an immense amount of faith in Michael Penix.
Clearly.
Because I don't think you, and the way that it's kind of been laid out is that it basically feels like they signed Kirk Cousins and they were good with him, and then they saw Penix at his pro day, and everyone said
yes. Right, they fell in love with him. I understand.
Everyone said yes. And if that's if you have that sort of faith in him, then maybe he is the guy that comes in here and he can really revitalize it. By doing this, you've put yourself in a really tough situation because if you go with Penix, because here's the issue with going with Penix. If you go with Penix, at this point in the season, I don't know if you can go back to Kirk.
No, you can't. You can't do that.
And if you bench Kirk and he's done for the rest of the year, he's not going to be the starter next year.
Nope,
so now you got to eat another $50 million in dead cap, which is one of the problems that you just got out of from the whole Matt Ryan and Julio Jones
era. Denver's able to absorb it without Russell.
Yeah, that is true.
But they found their guy in Bo Nix, though,
exactly.
who's been a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
You see that pass he threw last night from the end zone? That late touchdown? That was unbelievable.
I'll give Bo Nix his credit. I was not a believer in Bo Nix. I didn't think he was worthy of being a first-round pick. I thought he was going to crash and burn. He's played very well. He's done a damn good job.
He's playing with a lot of confidence, too.
Yes.
He has a presence and a confidence and maybe that kind of Baker Mayfield-ish type scrappy dude who's also got a little talent. And Baker, I've always really liked Baker Mayfield. I love his story. You know, he walked on at Texas Tech.
I love his moxie.
Yeah, then he had to re-walk on at Oklahoma, basically.
Yeah.
And what does he do? Wins the Heisman Trophy, goes to Cleveland. That was not a good situation for him. That whole situation was just a fecal show.
Mm-hmm.
Although I like
all him. Wasn't on his
I loved his commercials, though. His commercials when he lived at the stadium.
Yes.
Walking around the bathrobe, eating his pizza cereal. He's a legit funny guy, good personality. His teammates love him. And you see what a tough competitor he is and how scrappy he is, the moxie, everything else. It's, we talked about earlier, that block downfield a couple of weeks ago. He's running down the field 30 yards. He throws a legit block. He didn't just get in his way.
Yeah.
Last week against Carolina, they're on the ropes, and Carolina's much improved. They're on the ropes. He has to leave the game with what appears to be a foot injury, comes back in the game. He has to scratch and claw on a certain run that he has, and he scratched and clawed for every centimeter. That got them in field goal range to win that game against Carolina. Now they're 6-6. I knew they weren't going away.
Yeah, one of the things you will never, regardless of how you feel about him as a quarterback, you'll never be able to question his effort.
Nope.
Baker Mayfield, if he's out, listen, I remember when Cleveland had him out there and he was on a bum ankle and had a shoulder sling and they were like out of playoff contention and he had no reason to be on the field, but he still was.
There you go. That's why he's got a ton of respect from all of his peers. He absolutely does. Oh, and guess what he did last year with Tampa Bay? They won a playoff game.
Yeah.
They beat the Eagles. Eagles are now dangerous again, aren't they?
Boy. How quickly.
We thought they were in disarray.
We thought Nick Sirianni was going to get fired.
Not now.
Hard to see that happening now with the way they're playing. He seemed to figure it out.
Yeah, well, their defensive line, I mean, that they've been playing great. They've been playing absolutely great. So, I don't know. Could we have an all-Pennsylvania Super Bowl, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh? Where is the Super Bowl this year?
Wow, that's a great question.
Well, look that one up. Research staff, producer, wearing all the hats. That would be interesting, right? But, like I said, Kirk Cousins certainly has to turn it around this week. He's got to be too good to just be absolutely going down the tubes. But then it's in
Nevada. It's at the Allegiant Stadium.
It's in the Death Star. Darth Vader's stadium. Yeah. But the thing about Kirk Cousins is, at his age, though, a lot of times when guys just lose it due to age, it happens like that. Happens like that. There's no zip on his ball right now. And I think I've heard a lot of quarterbacks say, when you get to be a certain age, I can see everything on the football field, but my body will not allow me to execute what I'm supposed to execute based on what I'm seeing. Has Kirk Cousins finally hit that wall? He's taken a lot of hits over the years. He's played a lot of football. And it can happen like that.
Also, correction, it is in New Orleans this year. Sorry, okay. Vegas was last year.
All right, we're going to come back. Final segment. Is there something to cheer about at State Farm Arena? It's a fun team over there to watch right now. I know it's just December. Anything can happen, but I'm intrigued. Sports Radio, 92.9 Game.
This is 92.9 The Game Tonight.
Yes, top rated in late night radio.
Talking all things Atlanta sports with you.
On Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It is Tribble at Night. I get to do this again next Tuesday and Wednesday as well. And of course, Falcons flyover on Sunday, approximately 6 o'clock after hopefully will be a Falcons win, a corrective emotional experience, if you will. They certainly need one after sliding down. They're top of the world at 6-3. Kirk O'Change was invited to the cookout, all the things.
That feels like so long ago.
Feels like a decade ago.
Oh, my goodness.
Then you go out there and lose to other Saints. Granted, the new coach energy is a thing. Mm-hmm. Teams always play inspired under that interim coach. And you go out there, lay an egg, and now you've lost 3 in a row in that loss at Denver. But there was no excuse coming off a bye week to play the way you did. But defensively, the bye week certainly seemed to do some good. Maybe the defense has turned a corner. Maybe last week wasn't an anomaly. We will wait to see. Speaking of anomalies, the Hawks have now won 4 in a row, and it's the way they're doing it as well. It seems like Trae Young is kind of bought in to Quinn Snyder's vision. It seems like Quinn Snyder has his ear. They have a really good relationship. Trae had this reputation as a coach killer. I don't know if that's true or not. It seemed like maybe he was a toxic in the locker room. Doesn't seem to be the case now. Because I've always liked Quinn Snyder as a coach. Very intellectual basketball mind. The dude has a law degree and an MBA. And he went to Duke, of course, played for Coach K. And he's been a terrific head coach. And it seems like they have put together something good with this team. Zachary Richichet, not bad at all.
Yeah. No, he's been very good.
I think he's been very good.
Nicely. And I like that he's progressing very nicely. Like, it's been coming along.
Yep.
You can see him getting better week by week.
Playing with confidence, too. Doesn't seem...
Yeah.
I mean, he's only nine. He's just a baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you noticed... What is it with all the kids now? They have the Sideshow Bob looking haircut. Kind of all shaved on the side,
yeah,
fluffy
the side,
up top.
Fluff it up.
That's look, they all look like that. Dyson Daniels, what a revelation. Eastern Conference Defensive Player of the Month.
I'm
in love with that player, man. I'm in love with that kid.
I think you can make a strong case he's Defensive Player of the Year, not just Eastern Conference Defensive Player of the Month.
Well, anytime a team wants to make a run in the playoffs, they have to have that elite shutdown defender. That's what he is.
Yeah, he's been that.
And wasn't the thing on him? Yeah, he's going to be a great defender. He might give you 8 points tonight. He's almost averaging 14 points, had 19 last night. He's proven he can score. And I like the fact that Trae Young is getting every bit as much satisfaction with a beautiful assist as he is making one from downtown. Because that is such a pretty thing. You know, Caitlin Clark kind of did that in the WNBA. She was so used to scoring. I think she loved the fact that she discovered, oh, I can make these brilliant passes in the professional level, and there's a lot of satisfaction in that. And
Absolutely.
Now they're kind of winning by committee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Last year it was just Trey and, good luck.
DeJounte.
It was just either one or the other last year. But now, last night, your second unit. Well, they get 52 points off their second unit last night.
Something like that. Yeah, like they
look really good.
They're playing very, very well.
So you got your big three. You got Zachary. You got Dyson Daniels. You got Trey, and you got Jalen Johnson, who just got paid and paid massively. So maybe something as sexy as brewing down at State Farm Arena. Finally,
you got a nice core. I still think, and it's no disrespect to Clint Capella,
I agree.
You need a more consistent, dominant big man.
Yep.
I think that's the last piece, though. I think you've got your number one in Trey, who can run the offense. I think you have a ton of young complimentary pieces around him with Jalen Johnson. I love DeAndre Hunter coming off the bench. Please leave him there.
I was about to say, I do love him coming off the bench too, and if he can stay healthy.
He's been
a bust so far, but he is a good defender.
If he can be that sixth man and be that guy off the bench and come in and be productive, because that's where he's been extremely consistent, playing well when he has been healthy this year in that role. Love it. Yep. I like the way the team is coming together and is presently constructed.
And I tell you, man, I was heavily, vociferously mocking that front office for the longest time, but they seemingly deserved it.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking a Tony Ressler's son is running things, and what does he know about basketball?
Mm-hmm.
The GM's name, dang it.
We're all blanking.
Yeah, we're all blanking. I thought, you know, he's kind of a slickster in a way. He's polished, went to Stanford, very polished, knows his corporate speak very well. But, you know, you also have Kyle Korver, and you have your head coach, too, something about basketball. It seems like it's coming together.
From the outside looking in, it seemed like there was a lot of tomfoolery going on. And when you also looked at the way that the roster was constructed, you kind of sat back and said, where did they get better?
Yep.
And at the beginning of the year, it wasn't really easy to see that. Now you're seeing it.
Now you're seeing
it. Dyson Daniels. Because I remember after the first game when he had a huge, the opening game of the season. And I remember that was the thing. It was like, all right, if he's going to give you 15 a night, that's a difference
maker. That's a revelation, man, to go with that defense.
That's a difference maker.
Yep.
So, because now it gives you more options. It's not really Trey is your only go-to option. You've got multiple guys now that you feel can get you a basket, multiple guys now who you feel can hit those open shots that Trey is inevitably going to get for them because of the gravity that he has on the court. So, like you said, they're building something that is worthy of watching and being exciting.
As currently constituted now, I have no idea what's going to transpire. They could suddenly have to suffer a rash of injuries, and that could set them back. They keep playing the way they are right now. I could see them maybe scratching and clawing to a 5 or 6 seed, maybe.
Absolutely. I was going to say, I mean, and that was one of the reasons why they kind of maybe started off the season slow, is because at the beginning of the year, they did have a ton of injuries.
Yeah.
Now they're finally kind of healthy.
Kind of healthy.
You're seeing the results of what it looks like when everyone is available.
Well, we shall see. But this in-season tournament thing is just a joke to me. It's an unnecessary gimmick, kind of like the we're talking about earlier, Major League Baseball actually considering the golden batter rule, which means that you can have your best player come up no matter where you are in the lineup, no matter what the situation is. But what if you want him to come up one hitter before he's slotted to hit in the lineup? What happens if he gets on base? What do you do then? Does the guy he hit for takes the base and he gets a second at bat? I don't know. How are they going to work it out?
I think
the whole thing's a joke, by the way.
Yeah, no, I don't want to see this at all.
No.
Please keep it far away. Again, no one wants to see this. It's gimmicky.
You're turning it into a sideshow.
Yeah, you know, it makes it feel like we're not playing professional baseball.
You're drawing a mustache on the Mona Lisa is what you're doing by doing that.
Like but, the golden at-bat rule.
The golden at-bat.
It literally sounds like something that, like, I would have on, like, I don't know if you played, like, the little computer game, Backyard Baseball and stuff like that. Like, it sounds like something I'd get on there. The golden at-bat. And a kid comes out and has a gold
bat. A fan gets an at-bat in a game. Let's do that. Or the old Rockin' Jock. If you remember MTV from back in the day, you used to have the Rockin' Jock softball game, which was pretty hilarious and absurd. I guess if you hit a ball to a certain spot, it was worth like 12 runs.
Exactly.
Or when they had the Rock and Jock basketball, you'd have like a 20-point shot.
Yeah, 20-point shot somewhere on the floor. Yeah, we don't need that.
Well, it would be nice if the Hawks were relevant, because they are not. They have not been as relevant. Atlanta United really was relevant for a long time. And oh, by the way, hats off to them.
Yes.
I don't know why they didn't keep what's-his-name on as a coach, because he kind of righted the ship. And
Valentino?
Yeah, Rob Valentino. I don't understand why. There's reasons for it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But he took it the right way. He's going to get a gig somewhere. But that was fun to see, because Atlanta United, they were an afterthought to me when they were buried in the standings in the Eastern Conference. Well, they're not going anywhere. I didn't even pay any attention to them. All of a sudden, that last weekend happened. They get the win over Orlando. Then all the chips fell into place. Mm-hmm. They had like a 10% chance of making the playoffs. It all happened. They win at Montreal. They bounced Messi and Miami out. But then two of their most prolific goal scorers got hurt in that Orlando game, and the season was over. But that was fun.
It was, as someone who was here cutting highlights for basically every United match this season, it was a roller coaster of a year.
Yeah.
Especially because it started off very well. Like, I think they started off, I want to say they started off winning like three in a row.
Yeah, and then the bottom just...
And then the bottom fell out. Obviously, Yorgos Giakoumakis gets traded out or sent out.
Yep.
So it was a lot that happened. You lost a lot of guys. Obviously, you move on from Pineda. And to just, for Rob Valentino to gather the team and to right the ship and to get them all to buy in. And again, it's the same thing of, even though they didn't win and maybe get the desired results, the team never quit. They always went out and they played hard, and they never stopped trying to win. And they were able to put some of those together when it mattered most and get into the dance and pull off what, by all statistics, is the greatest upset in MLS playoff history. So I think there's a lot to hang your hat on with this club and a lot to be proud of, despite having an up-and-down season.
So I have my all-time favorite Atlanta athletes. Of course, Neek is up there. Deion Sanders up there. Steve Barkowski. Dale Murphy. Henry Aaron. Brad Guzan is up there now.
That
is so miraculous. The way he came back at his age off an Achilles, playing as well as he does.
This season was phenomenal by Brad.
Standing on his head, man. He's back then. He's 40 years old. He's coming back. He's got one or two good years left.
Yeah,
I guess he'll find a nice gig in the front office with it, I'm sure, but he's back.
Yeah, I saw nothing this year that made me feel like he has lost a step or that he can't go another year or two.
And plus, even though you lose a step, he has seen so much. There's nothing he hasn't seen on a soccer field. He can anticipate where he doesn't have to react as explosively as he once did, but his anticipation can help him get to a certain spot. And in the job he did in the shootout, Montreal, just save a couple, you're going to win, chances are, and he was able to do that. So, I love Brad Guzan. Great interview, too. Great guy, and it was fun to watch. So hopefully the Hawks can maintain what's going on right now, winners of four straight. Got to go to Milwaukee. Milwaukee kind of sputtered out of the gate, but they've won 8 of their last 10. LeBron and the Lakers come to town on Friday, and a lot of people are speculating as Father Time finally caught up. LeBron did not look good in the loss to Minnesota the other night, just scored 10 points. But have you heard all the scuttlebutt out there about LeBron possibly using PEDs? I've heard it. It wouldn't shock me.
That's I feel
you
like
you got to think about it. He's almost 40 years old. Still, if that, I mean, I'm yeah. sorry, you know.
So here's my.
I'm not saying it's true or not, but not. Nothing would surprise me because oh, yeah. I have fundamentally lost all faith in all institutions in this world.
I wouldn't be surprised to find it out. However, I will say he does spend $1 million a year taking care
he
of his
does.
Body. And so,
and you can buy a lot of good things for that. They can stay one step ahead of the testing.
Exactly.
I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. Well, they've been saying he's been on PEDs like his whole career, though.
Maybe.
I've been hearing Bron was on steroids for like a decade now.
Well, guess not. Guess what, Bronny? I don't even have you in my top five all time. Sorry. Kobe, Magic, Bird, guys like that.
Mm-hmm.
Bron, you're not
there. Sorry. I can respect it.
Not there. I think what really turned me off with him was the fact, well, one thing, it was comical that time. He wanted to be videotaped reading a book. He's still on page one.
He tries too hard. He's an all-time liar. He's an all-time liar. And, yeah. like, I don't want to paint, like, liars in, like, a bad person, but, like, yeah. he just lies about, like, little funny things. Like,
yeah. He so desperately wants to be regarded as the greatest ever, and you're not.
Yeah.
You're just not. I'm sorry,
yeah.
you're not.
Yeah, I agree.
MJ 6-0 in the finals. I know he had Scottie Pippen with him, I understand. And all the credit in the world, he did put that Cleveland team on his back and win a world title with basically mm-hmm. nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So. All right. Well, hopefully the Falcons can get it all figured out. Georgia going to be taking on Texas, 4 o'clock, 2.5-point underdog. That's not going to be easy. Georgia's in regardless, though. But if they win the SEC championship, they get a much-needed bye and a home game. They don't have to worry about going to, like, South Bend on December 20th or Columbus, Ohio on December 20th. No part of that. Dom, wonderful job, my friend. Falcons fly over on Sunday after what will hopefully be a Falcons victory. And I'll be back in the seat next Tuesday night and Wednesday at 7 o'clock. So tune in and tell 100 of your friends. I'm Rob Tribble, Sports Radio, 1990 Game.